to a very special edition of the Running Channel podcast. I'm joined by my incredibly talented and even more excitable co-host, Sarah Hartley, today, and she's coming all the way from Osaka in Japan, and then myself and Rick are back in London.
Woohoo!
We made it happen.
Living your best life in London, and we've actually managed to make this happen with a 9-hour time difference, which I think is the most impressive thing.
Do you really think that the 9-hour time difference is the most impressive thing, or do you think the fact that you've literally, within the last day, well, the last few hours, finished an incredible marathoning feat over the side of the world?
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive too, and the time difference has massively played a part in making that much harder. So, yeah, okay, I'll take credit for that. I'm amazing.
You look fine, Sarah. You look normal.
I think I'm just riding the wave of adrenaline. I did not sleep well at all last night. I got a bit too complacent with the jet lag and it came back and bit me in the bum. But I actually
thought jet
now
lag was
feel
a state
fine.
Of mind.
Yeah, it is a state of mind until it gets to like 3 a.m. and you're just sat awake being like, I have to leave to run a marathon in 3 hours.
Well,
I was like
incredibly
counting sheep, trying everything.
Well, incredibly, we're going to dive in, and that's obviously the main topic of today's podcast. We're also going to touch on the news, if that's anything near as important as what Sarah's news is, and then dive into your questions as well. So let's get stuck in. Right, so without further ado, I'm just going to ask you how you're doing, Sarah. You've just finished a marathon in Osaka. How did it go?
It was so hard, so hard, but I am so pleased with the overall result. So I knew it was going to be a challenge. I knew I'd trained for a time that was like pretty aggressive if I was dealing with like a UK marathon where I could have had 10 hours sleep the night before and a really easy week leading up to it. And then I probably could have targeted like sub 3:45. But no, I flew across the other side of the world. I had to battle a 9-hour time difference and run a marathon. So I am incredibly chuffed to come away with a 10-minute PB of 3:49.29.
Wow.
3:49.29. That's amazing.
Yeah. And what was your PB before that?
3:59.58.
Yes, with that sprint finish, incredible sprint finish at Berlin Marathon when you abandoned all sensibilities around filming and just went for the line. How much filming were you doing during this one?
So I filmed all of it. You'll be able to see it all on YouTube very soon. And I did have another similar moment though where I was like, I'm going to hand over to future Sarah, and I've done a bit of voiceover post the race because up until the race, I've been asking my coach, Andy, like, what pace do I need to go? What pace should I be doing for this marathon? And he was like, don't worry, we'll chat about it when you get there. And then, so I got here and like a day went by and I was like, okay, I'm sure he's going to bring it up soon. And then we literally got to dinner the night before and I was like, oh my God, I actually don't know what I'm going to do if he turns around and goes like, let's go 3:30, just sprint off.
I mean, that would have come out of nowhere. I know I've spoken to him and he definitely thinks that's in your locker, but not yet.
Definitely not yet. So he actually did a really, really like intelligent pacing plan, which was so good. So I chunked it.
Of course you did.
Did a TRC podcast classic, broke it down into chunks, and each chunk had a different pace as well. So I started off for the first 10k, I ran at 5:30 per kilometer. Then when I got to 10k, I turned it into 5:20, which actually felt pretty good. Then when I got to 20k, I had to ramp it up again and go to 5:10. That felt
That's a pretty tough thing to be hanging over you for that first 20k to be thinking about, I've got to go faster.
Yeah, well, so the 5:30 and the 5:20, I was like, that's fine, because 5:20 has always been like 5:20 is the pace you need to run 3:45, and that's always been my kind of like default. If I'm tired, I can stick at that pace. So I was like, okay, those first two are fine. The 5:10, I was bricking it because I had no idea whether I could pick it up. And also the race started to get a little bit hillier towards the latter stages, which is lovely. I'm so glad they did that.
Yeah,
so,
how did Andy describe it to you beforehand?
Lumpy. I think he either called it bumpy or lumpy. It's not bumpy and lumpy. There is one huge hill. Like,
right, okay.
You could just see runners being like killed off by this hill, not literally, but
what point does that come in on the course, like what sort of distance?
I think it was like 33 kilometers this hill.
Oh wow, so 20 is that 20 miles on the nose?
Yeah,
and how long does the hill last for?
A long time. Like, I don't, it felt like forever, but in
the rest of the race
fact, it was Yeah, it was just one big mountain to the top.
Yeah.
No, 10K the hill
out is a hard time to hit a big hill.
Yeah, I think it was probably like, it probably wasn't even any more than like 500 meters, but you basically, so the course route had loads of kind of switchback out and backs. So that was really fun, but you came into a switchback, looked at the hill, then turned right, did about 5 kilometers, and then came back to do the hill.
Whoa. So yeah, am I right? There's a few those switchbacks, they're like literally 180 turns like you see in triathlons, is that right?
Yeah. Which actually, I actually quite liked it, because the bit that I found the hardest is actually from 35K-ish to the finish is one big straight line, and you could see all the runners in front of you. And I found that so hard, because it was like 3 to 4K of just like, I know I need to go over there. And it was kind of like a, what's it called? Like a mirage of like, it just got further and further and further away. But no, I actually do quite like a hill. That's when I like knuckle down, get my head down and keep plodding along. But that one, I think my pace went to like 6:30 just because you could just feel everyone going like, oh no.
and then did you manage to kind of even the pace up again after you kind of came off the hill, or was it a struggle for that whole last, you know, 7 or 8K post the hill?
So it then went downhill a little bit, which was nice. And
what,
then
your race experience or the actual elevation?
The actual elevation. Yeah, it then went immediately straight down and then it kind of flattened out. So past 30 kilometers, I didn't have a pace plan. It was kind of just, I think Andy said, run as you feel, which actually I struggled the most with, because I find like 30K, everyone always says 30K is halfway in a marathon, which it really is. And that is a good way to look at it, because if you get to 21 and you think you're halfway, you'll get to 30 and like realize you're halfway and it's a bit crushing.
Yeah, that last 10K must feel like a really long way.
Yeah, it's super far. Time seems to move so much slower in that last 12K. But yeah, I got to 30K and I think 30 to 35 was probably my slowest section, just because I was like, I could go faster, but I could burn out. So I'm just going to go in my head. I could have got 3:40 if at the 30K mark, I'd gone like, right, ramp it up again and go to like 5 minute splits. But I just did not have that in my legs.
What's the experience like of actually racing in Japan?
It's like another level. It's really interesting. So Tokyo Marathon is next week, which is another huge, huge marathon in Japan. And this, it felt like Osaka is like a, I don't know how to describe it. It felt like there were about 30,000 runners. So a huge, huge race. But it felt like a really intimate local race as you were running. Like everybody cheering, if you made eye contact with them, would literally cheer for you like you were their own like child. They were just so into it. And I think as well, like, because Japan's now opened back up, this is the first time in a while that they've had international runners back in this race. It was so nice to just get that, like, oh, you've come here to run this. This is amazing. We're out, like, celebrating it. And also, the other thing is, wow, Japanese runners are phenomenally fast. Like, they're...
Really?
Yeah, I think people don't realize the depth in Japan. Like, they're such a... You know, I don't want to stereotype, but sort of a quiet, very polite, reserved culture. But the passion that they have for running, and the fact that there are hundreds of professional runners that are all supported by the big corporations like Honda and Toyota or whoever it might be in Japan. And then I think I had a quick look. I was desperately trying to find your results, Sarah, before you let me know how you got on. And I couldn't find it anywhere, but I could see the top 30 or 40 or 50 elite men's times. And just the depth. Like, yes, there were some East African athletes at the front, but the Japanese depth then, of the number of people sub 210 was phenomenal.
Yeah. What was really cool as well is that there were lots of people out cheering, and you kind of got the feel that it's such a big part of, if you live near here, you will come and do this race. And then once you like either don't want to do it anymore, or if you take a year off, you then come and cheer. Like there were so many people stood on the sidelines, and I was like, you're not just here cheering for a friend. You're here cheering like what this race is about. Like you're just here to, because you love it. And I think you really do get that sense of like when everyone hits the wall in a marathon, that's when you kind of see the difference between people who are kind of determined to just get to the end, and people who were like, oh, why did I sign up to this? And I didn't really feel like there was anyone who was going, why did I sign up to this? It just got like more and more and more like, yeah, come on, we're almost there, this is amazing.
And not even you, there was no moment at which you were thinking, what am I doing, this is the worst thing ever.
See, I always get that in the first 20k, which I need to work on.
Weird. Yeah.
I literally spent the first 20k being like, why have I done this again?
Blaming me for it, probably.
Yeah, I'm like, oh god, Andy set me up again. Off I go.
I'm so
he
sorry.
Still hasn't run a marathon and I'm on my third.
Here we go. Yeah, like, whilst even though you're celebrating your own achievement, you still managed to have a dig at me, which is excellent. So I'm very proud of your achievements, and I'll take that one on the chin. Culturally, was it strange to run, I assume a lot of the signage is still recognizable, or was it a complete culture shock?
It was actually really good. I'd say the biggest culture shock was the expo, because a lot of that was, there is obviously Japan has only just opened up again after the pandemic, so there were lots and lots and lots of restrictions in place to keep the race really safe, but because a lot of them weren't in English, that was quite challenging. So I was very glad that I was out here with Mizuno, and there were lots of Mizuno like employees there who spoke English as well and could help us kind of get through it, because there was an app where you had to kind of measure your temperature over the last like 6 or 7 days, I think, and then give that to them. And then it was all to do with QR codes. You had to present your passport, but they actually had, I would say that if you can either speak English or Japanese, then you are like set in this race. They have English speaking kind of information guides all around the race.
Yeah. Wow, and then, amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. And then they had like kilometer markers, so that was easy to see. And then they also had, so I always almost pick up the electrolyte drink on a marathon. And like, I did it in the first one and it really...
Yeah, nothing new on race day, Sarah.
No, it really messed with my insides. But I think the one today was called like Aqua something, and it was in a blue cup. And I was so close to being like, oh, but then I saw that it was like slightly translucent, and I was like, I don't think that's. And then I ran a little bit further, and there was one that clearly said water, and I was like, here we go.
Got it. Yeah, you have got to be so careful, haven't you? The sort of starting to get delirious and like really desperately thirsty or whatever it might be, and if you're not carrying something that you're planning on taking and you are waiting for the water stops, making sure you don't just in a fit of desperation take something that's going to mess with your insides and have you diving into the toilets, which I want to segue to toilets briefly, just because just before recording you mentioned something and I actually don't know what, but you were very excited to tell me about toilets.
So this is the other funny thing. So because I was racing in Japan, I assumed when I was filming that most people around me wouldn't understand what I was saying, so I could just kind of freely speak. So when it came to talking about toilets, I was like, it's fine, everyone around me isn't going to understand what I'm saying, and I still don't know whether they did. But basically, because of the combination of jet lag and we left super early, so we kind of had to prepare our own breakfast, so I ended up having like a sports bar for breakfast, basically like a mixture of that.
What sort of time did you have to have breakfast as well?
6, I think we had breakfast, so not like ridiculously early, but the race was, I think we started at like 9:20, so a bit of a gap. But basically from 6 till 1, all I ate was either a bar or like energy chews, so just all kind of sports nutrition sugar, which is great for like powering you through the race, but not so great when your insides are like, what's going on? And also for the last few days we've eaten out at loads of kind of different Japanese restaurants, and the food has been out of this world, but obviously you are going to get a little
pictures. You posted some pictures of the food. It looks amazing.
It's so good. We went with, on the first night, we went with someone and we were literally just like, order whatever you want and we'll try anything. And it was so good. But obviously, like, compared to like British food, my stomach's already gone a little bit like, okay, this is new. And then add in a whole 6 hours of sports nutrition and my stomach was just like, what is going on? So basically every single time I fueled during the race for like 1 to 2 kilometers, I felt like I was gonna poo myself.
I wonder whether you'd been just one running along with a GoPro shouting about how you need a poo.
I was running along going like, and I don't know whether this is going to make it into the final video, but basically there are loads of GoPro clips where I'm going like, oh, I really feel like I'm going to pee myself any minute. And then basically it got to the point where I was like, oh, maybe it is just a fart. And I farted.
Oh my God.
And it was
this
like...
too much information, but I love it.
Sorry. This is what happens when you run. Runners always talk about toilet stuff. But yeah, basically I farted at like 14 kilometers. And one into my GoPro, I was like, sorry to the people behind. So I hope they didn't speak English. And two,
incredible.
It was one of those ones where I was like, it's 50-50 whether that was a fart.
Oh, Sarah, this is the stuff that people are here for. This is what people are tuning into the Running Channel podcast. Yeah. It's the reality.
Look,
of
I just
want to
tell. Yeah, but so many people will go on Instagram and be like, wow, look at all the pretty shots. I want to get down to the nitty gritty of, like, you know, that's a thing that could happen. I remember Berlin Marathon, I ran behind someone who it wasn't a fart, and you could see it wasn't a fart.
Yeah, you've got to be careful of your rough shorts color. I think black shorts are the way forward for a marathon. But
this is what I said.
On the course itself, I assume Japanese portaloos are normal, but like Japanese toilets in hotels and stuff are not normal for a kind of Western UK, what you're used to.
Oh yeah, this has been incredible. So the one that we have in the hotel, it's a heated seat, which takes a little bit of getting used to. And then it has the full, like what you would expect, where you press a button and it can... I don't know how to
just
describe
strange.
It.
It's
shoot water up your bum.
Shoot water. Any part of your bum as well, front or back.
Lovely. There's all sorts of nozzles and jets and buttons, right? It's really complex buttons on the side of a toilet.
And then I'm excited. I'm going to Tokyo tomorrow. So, and apparently the ones there like play music to you as well as you do your thing.
Oh, well, that's very nice.
Yeah.
So back to the back. We shouldn't spend too long on toilets. You know, we want to give people the reality, but then we want to
back
bring
to 3:49. That should be a nickname. Andy. We should call her 3:49. When are you coming back, 3:49?
You're
going on holiday now, aren't you?
Yes,
going to spend
some time in Japan. But when I want to talk about one question in the race. So you're running in the Mizuno Rebellion Pro. We're filming. Oh, very handily, they are behind you. So for video viewers,
wow,
Sarah's holding them up.
They look clean.
Can't believe you just smelled them.
I think these are the one I ran in. I've got two pairs. Yeah, these are the ones I ran in. They actually don't smell that bad. I'm quite impressed with that. I did pour water on them at one point, though, by accident.
So these are the Mizuno Rebellion Pro, which are, I mean, they look like a prototype shoe. They are a shoe that you can buy. And when we were at the National Running Show in Birmingham, people were queuing to try these out on the treadmill.
What's interesting, though, is we've been here with Mizuno, and we went on a tour of their new innovation center, which is called The Engine. Incredible building. There, they were talking about how this shoe had evolved from, I think it was called the Wave Dual Pro, which they launched last year. And that one is modeled off of a like sprint spike, basically. This one kind of has the heel cut off, but much less aggressively. The Wave Dual like doesn't have a heel at all, and they've basically modeled off that, and it's called, I think, Speed Assist, to kind of push. When you put on a super shoe, it feels different, but this one especially feels like really, really different.
Yeah, just to wrap up on that, I suppose that that makes sense that if they've been developed from a sprint spike. So I used to, I suppose, running a mile, you kind of had the option of running in a slightly more aggressive sprinter spike or like a longer distance 5K, 10K spike. And I would always choose to run in the longer distance 5K, 10K spike because I didn't like how aggressive the other ones were. Didn't suit my mechanics. So actually that is a bit of insight as to why they felt like they did for me, because just the way of my foot strike and the way that I kind of roll through, I've always gone for something. Well, yeah, you guys would definitely accuse me of being old and boring, so no surprise that I went for the slightly safer option in my career.
See, whereas I wanted to experience if you look at lots of super shoes now, they'll kind of advise you on whether to wear them based off your times. And like, really, if you want to get the maximum out of these shoes, then you should be running like a sub 2:30 marathon, which obviously I did not.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get a sense
this time.
Give me 100 years and a like full transplant into a super robot, and I'll be there.
Full transplant into a super robot. See, I think that little sentence there just gives you an idea of what time it is in Japan as we're recording, and the fact that Sarah has run a marathon today.
I'm not quite as quick as I used to be. I wanted to get a sense of what it felt like to run in that shoe, and because I don't tend to heel strike, it was fine to kind of go all the way through, and it was super fast. So I enjoyed experiencing that.
Okay, so Sarah, the most exciting thing is obviously you're out there to document the marathon experience. So I guess we're going to get a full blow-by-blow account?
Yes, you are. In fact, I would actually go to say that this is probably the best documented race I've ever done. So stay tuned for that, because I think there were... Yeah, it was a really, really good one to talk about. There were so many different things to talk about, and I actually wasn't too broken by the end to stop filming. So I think it's going to be very, very good. So stay tuned for that to see my hallucinating jet lagged brain run 26.2 miles. You're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we're going to briefly touch on the news, and then it's time for your questions.
So an incredible summary of Sarah's experience at Osaka Marathon. I can't wait to see the video. And I know, speaking for Rick as well, like, we're really proud, pleased. Like, you're sort of so out of it that you sort of almost don't seem to have appreciated what you've just done. But a 10-minute PB is a massive thing. So, yeah, just another well done from me.
349.
I feel like I've got two.
349.
I know. Yeah,
let's hammer that.
Still doesn't feel real.
So we're going to dive into one really quick news story, because ultimately here we've covered the news here. All the news that anyone cares about is that Sarah ran a marathon and ran really fast. But I've got a lighthearted one just before we
Let's move to the questions. Cheers. Thanks very much. Yeah, done. All right. Great.
No, go on. Let Andy have his little... Hang on. Have you got a question that's not about elite runners? A news story.
It's news and it's nothing to do with elite runners. So that is a result in itself. I saw something and it made me laugh, and it's in Coventry. It was on the Coventry Telegraph, which obviously I'm a regular reader of. I'm not, but I saw this. Ed leads their running group there for Run Together. He led a group of his athletes on a new running route that none of them had done before, but without having told them what they were going to do. And then when they all got to the pub afterwards, they actually realized that they had drawn an incredible Diplodocus around the streets of Coventry using their Strava art. So when they logged onto Strava, they got this really, like, pretty good, because we've had a crack at Strava art before, haven't we, Sarah? Who won that video, by the way? Who did the best Strava art?
I think I won it.
Didn't you use cones and like draw a square or something?
That's right.
I did an incredible Strava kudos thumb, and yes, I won that challenge. That's what you're trying to say there.
Oh, kudos thumb. Yeah.
Well done.
And let's do a little shout out.
You don't seem very enamoured with that.
No,
she just run a marathon. Leave her alone.
I'm so tired. But what I was going to say is that Jerick, who is very famous for doing Strava art, if you've seen it on Instagram, has recently, I think he either broke his arm or his elbow. So shout out, Jerick. Hope you're okay. Hope you're back to drawing Strava art soon. But his ones, if you want to see, I mean, go and watch Andy and Rick's version of it, because, you know, they tried. But if you want to go and see some actual Strava art, go and look at Jerick, because it's...
Okay, well, I mean, that started as this nice story about a dinosaur and ended up with, as everything, with you guys just taking the mickey out of me. But we said we'd keep the news short so that we can get into the more important stuff, which is your questions. So you're listening to the Running Channel podcast, and next up are your questions.
Okay, so the first question is from Philip.
What's going on, Rick? You love a royal name. Why can't you pronounce this one?
Just put Prince in front of it and then you'll be fine.
Okay, so the first question is from Philip. Based on something Andy said about your heart rate, RPE, being different if you train at a different time of day from normal, is it possible to fully adapt to a new time of day? And how long does it take? And how did Andy find competing in the evenings if he preferred to train in the morning? Well, it's kind of multifaceted, that question.
Okay, I'll try and break it down nice and quick. So training at heart rate level and RPE are different things. So heart rate is your body's physiological measurement of effort. So how many times a minute your heart is beating. And then your RPE is your rate of perceived exertion. So your score out of 10 or 20, depending on what scale you use. We'd usually use 10. So, you know, 9 or 10 out of 10, you're all out. 3 or 4 out of 10 is an easy run. I remember mentioning this, that you can have some days where you might run at the same time of day, on the same route, but you just feel totally different. and you run at the same pace, but your rate of perceived exertion on one run might be an easy run, 3 or 4 out of 10. And then all of a sudden doing it the next week at the same time, same distance, same weather conditions, whatever. And you just don't feel as good. And you'd put it at like 6 out of 10, like quite a big difference in how hard it is. You can probably measure that in heart rate. So if you are under stress at work or in your home life, or if you've not slept very well, and then that might be reflected in heart rate. But still, you could actually be running at the same heart rate and still not feel as good. So the question was then, how quickly can you change completely? Yes, you definitely can. You think about the way that night workers adapt to their kind of circadian rhythms and so on. You definitely can change things. I preferred training in the morning because I could get it out of the way, but I did have to race in the evenings. So actually in the build up to major championships, we would switch my workouts so that I would train, I'd do my serious track workouts in the evenings. And actually I didn't like them psychologically because I had to wait to do those training sessions, but I did run physically better in the evenings. There's lots of I remember at the time reading various bits of science about your circadian rhythms and the way your body adapts, and actually training in the evening is probably your optimum time.
Really? Optimum time in the evening? That's amazing.
I think so. And yeah, some of my races, like when I ran in Oslo, I think my race starts at 10 or 10:30 p.m. And similarly in the Olympics or the World Championships, you might do a heat. So actually, I ran an Osaka a long time ago, Sarah, in 2007. That's when World Championships
were. And he's just remembered that he went to Japan.
Yes. I had three rounds, heat, semi-final and final. And the heats were at midday. And then the final was at like 9, 10 p.m. at night. So and there were two or three, it was like something like Saturday, Monday, Wednesday for the three rounds. So actually you had to be prepared for anything. But that was very difficult. Not only the jet lag, but then racing, you know, essentially 10 hours apart.
I think as well, it's super useful. Like if you've got, for example, if you're traveling somewhere for a marathon and you've worked out your timings and you're going to have to get up way earlier than you'd usually get out, it's quite good if you're doing a dress rehearsal of like the distance, like your longest run. It's actually quite beneficial to practice the kind of full routine of, if you do have to wake up at 6 a.m, at least know what it feels like.
Yeah, I think it's sensible for anything. Like if you're going to do something, rehearse it. So rehearse your nutrition for a marathon, rehearse your longest run, rehearse the shoes or kit that you're going to wear, rehearse the timings. Go through the same routine that you can control the controllables. So if you've got a nice warm-up routine that involves the same distance of running, then followed by some nice drills, then that's something that you can always do as long as you allocate the time. But yeah, do it at 7 p.m. at night if that's when your race is going to be, as opposed to doing everything before work.
We've also got a question from Andy Nixon, who emailed us to ask, when you test various brands and models of shoes in a week of training, does this cause problems with your feet or your body in general?
This is a good question. Because we're obviously in a very unique position here where we get to test different shoes from lots of different brands. And if you've ever been to have your kind of gait analysed, you'll know that there are, like, people have different preferences. And I think it's definitely something that we're all kind of aware of. Like if you've been used to a kind of heel to toe drop that's quite high, and then you get gifted a brand new pair of zero drop shoes or whatever the brand kind of calls that drop, you don't want to go out straight away in them and run a marathon or a super long run. Like I think we're all conscious of that can have a big effect, just like you would if you bought a brand new pair. I personally am quite good. My feet are quite happy jumping into lots of different pairs of shoes. But
yeah, the benefits of youth, Sarah. The benefits of youth. You can just wear
whatever
you want.
I'm just so adaptable. I'm like plasticine.
Yeah, brilliant.
Whereas Andy, you know, is just cracking his foot, getting it into the shoe, brushing the dust off.
Yeah, just waiting for me to turn to dust as well. That's what I feel like. Yeah, just blowing cobwebs off my running kit.
Yeah. How do you find it?
But
Andy?
No, I quite enjoy testing different shoes, but I would play it safe and test the different shoes on shorter, slower runs usually, for the first time out. And then when I particularly like a pair of shoes or I've got to put them through their paces to run a little bit quicker, then I can do that in various different ways. But I very rarely go out and just run all out in a pair of shoes.
great. So we've survived the first virtual podcast. I think we should all get a little pat on the back for that. Let us know. Email into podcast at therunningchannel.com if you have any questions that you want answering, or if you would like us to go to more events and then do a podcast straight after. Maybe not straight after, maybe we do it the day
after.
You're remarkably coherent, Sarah. You're remarkably coherent, Sarah. You're really you. With it. I've been very impressed. Please be nice to us on the audio quality of this, because we are recording in three completely different places.
Yeah.
Email in to ask any questions, but also maybe to congratulate Sarah for her efforts, or to let us know any of the challenges that you're undertaking, because we'd love to hear from you, and then maybe we can give you a little shout out on the podcast too. Oh, and Sarah's dangling her medal for us in the picture.
Handshaver medal, yeah.
So, yeah.
349. She did a 349. 349. Have fun in Japan.
Thanks. See you next time.
Bye.